Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on May 13th of 2012 under the headline, Murder Defendant Acquitted Becomes First Female Lawyer. It's part one of a three-part series on Mary Leonard. Here we go. Most Oregon professional women can point to a truly amazing pioneer who opened her profession up to women. Physicians can look to Bethenia Owens Adair, who, despite her now embarrassing enthusiasm for eugenics, was a giant in her field. Journalists have Abigail Scott Duniway, about whom little more needs to be said. But attorneys? Not so much. Not, that is, if you believe the conventional wisdom on the subject. Oregon's first female attorney was a bit of an embarrassment. Or so they say. The conventional wisdom on Oregon's first ever, quote, lady lawyer is that she was a grasping, crazy-eyed, but endearing borderline girl, grinding down all barriers through the sheer force of manic enthusiasm and professional-level nagging skills. Oh, and a murderess, too, her biographers hint darkly. It seemed she'd gotten into the profession of law after acquiring her husband's large estate through the simple expedient of murdering him before their pending divorce could be finalized. So the rumor goes. Then it adds, she moved to Portland and proceeded to make herself notorious as a last-ditch defender for the clearly guilty down-and-out in police court, and as a hard-drinking and unladylike mascot of sorts at social gatherings of young male attorneys half her age, and to top it all off, as an operator of boarding houses marketed winkingly to working prostitutes. Ah, stereotype. So comforting, so easy to laugh off. The truth of the Mary Leonard story will probably never be known, but it's a sure bet that it bears only a faint resemblance, at best, to that story. Mary's life was complicated and full of drama. On that, at least, everyone seems to agree. Originally from Switzerland, she came to the Dalles in 1875 to meet and subsequently marry a prosperous ferryman and hotelier and restaurateur named Daniel G. Leonard. She at the time was pushing 30, which at that time was an age at which women started worrying about spinsterhood. He was pushing 60. Their marriage lasted roughly 2 years before he sued her for divorce, claiming she was lazy and a spendthrift, and had started refusing him what he referred to, perhaps tellingly, as his marital rights, and that she had started sleeping regularly with a telegraph lineman who was staying in his hotel at the time. She shot back that he had put her to work in the kitchen like a servant, worked her until her health broke, and then refused to pay for necessary medical treatment, refused to give her money, and treated her with physical cruelty. She denied, of course, sleeping with the lineman. While all this was being sorted out, the judge ruled that Daniel must pay separate maintenance since they were living apart. This he refused to do in defiance of the judge, prompting her to fire off an angry letter to him in which she implied, essentially, that she would exact a terrible revenge if he did not obey the judge and that he should watch his back. A few nights later, someone slipped into Daniel G. Leonard's house and plugged him in the head with a small caliber pistol while he slept. There was no actual evidence that Mary had done it, but everyone assumed she had. First off, Daniel was apparently not a nice man, and the popular opinion on the subject was that he'd had it coming. So when, a year or so later, she was acquitted, it wasn't so much an exoneration as a justification, not what you need if you want your neighbors to stop looking at you like you're Norman Bates, nor did it help that her defense attorney was widely reported to have conducted a, quote, masterful defense, the implication being that the verdict had more to do with his skills than her lack of guilt. The timing of the crime also made it look bad for her. Had Daniel been murdered a few days later, after the divorce was final, she would have gotten nothing. But because he was murdered before the ruling could be made, she was his sole heir, and he was a fairly wealthy man. Thus, regardless of means or opportunity, she had motive in spades, And that was good enough for the rumor mill. And in 1877, being known as an over 30 adulterous, murderous, and almost divorcee, reputations didn't get much more ruined than that. Finding another husband was almost surely out of the question. She may also have felt her economic prospects in the Dalles weren't that good. Certainly she could have continued to operate her almost ex-husband's business and most likely made a good living doing it. But apparently she'd had enough of Wasco County. So instead she moved to Portland and went into business as the proprietress of a boarding house in the wild, seedy neighborhood known as the North End, the corner of town near the waterfront north of Stark Street, known as Old Town today. In the 1880s, the North End was the most dangerous part of town, home of Portland's Skid Road, peopled with sailors on shore leave, thieves, ruffians, laid-off loggers, and temporarily wealthy gold miners and prostitutes of all kinds. It was to these folks that Mary now went into business, renting out rooms. Looking over Mary Leonard's life today from the safe distance of 130 years, it looks pretty likely that her decision to do this changed her life and Oregon history more radically than anyone ever imagined it could. We'll talk about how that played out next week. Key sources in this story have included works by Carrie Abrams, Myrna Aldrich, and, much as I hate to give him any credit for it, Malcolm Clark Jr. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 500 stories originally created and published in newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, pulp-lit.com, which is a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers. This podcast is covered under Creative Commons license type CC by SA 4.0. Basically, that means you can do anything you want with the content. Reprint it, remix it, add to it, songify it, post it on your blog, fire up the old Cessna and skywrite it, whatever you want to do, as long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. But hey, if you need either A or B waived, hit me up, fj@offbeatoregon.com. Don't let my old middle school principal fool you. I actually do play well with others. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode, or maybe you'd like to get together and have a cup of coffee or a pint of hammerhead and talk history, email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. And the next one will be a Friday episode, which means it'll be brand new. So until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.